Yeah, so as I say, I'm on my way to you, just having a little break in Italy. And I'm with my partner's family just down the road, so they feed us every day.
It's just walking great. walking those beautiful Tuscan hills. It's just so gorgeous.
Yesterday we were on the beach down at a lovely place, Porto Santo Stefano, near Porto Ercole, and just walking on the sand, and it's just it's just wonderful.
Just wonderful.
But you know, I live in Australia now, so it's a long way to come here.
When did you move over to Australia? When did you go?
I moved over in 2005 and haven't regretted a moment. It was just the most incredible thing to do. And I've always loved Australia, and Australia's been really good to me in my career. And I think it came at a time in my life when I needed a kick, you know, because you get to be doing this a long time.
And I totally get that, because the fact is that I found a photograph of you and I. You played in Cork, in Ireland, in 1984.
Right. Cushley?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was one of the first TV shows that I had been involved in. And we ended up sitting in a bog, believe it or not.
Well, I've still got that. I've got that recording, that show.
Oh, yeah.
And,
it was a good show.
And that's where I remember you from.
Yeah,
you were very... You had head of hair like me.
Head of hair like you, but I decided to go a different route, which is working out brilliantly, thank you. But I kept the moustache, which has also gone the same route. But I remember when you played the excitement. When you were on stage, you are a little whirling dervish when you get going.
Yeah.
You really are. But you love it when you're on.
I think I still got that. You know, I mean, naturally you slow down. I'm 74 now, so, you know, time to move on. But I still feel the energy when I get up there, and you just forget any aches or pains or ailments or at all. I mean, I've got 3 stents in my heart.
Have you?
I've got a replacement kneecap, or partial anyway. And I've got terrible Crohn's disease these days. But I get round it all, you know, and I find my energy is unimpaired most of the time. But I'll tell you what, I'm a rare 70-year-old in the fact that most people my age don't sleep very much. I sleep an incredible amount. And the sleep is what gives me the energy. And
well, you see, you're sleeping because you have an innocent past, Leo. That's why you're able to sleep. Because you've done nobody any harm. That's why that is. But there's no question. We sound like 2 alphas on a bench, but there's no question about it. Sleep is absolutely essential.
Totally. Yeah, we sound like they're tramps in waiting.
That's right. You know what I'll do now? Sleep. I had a fellow on the television once. I asked him, had he any hobbies? And he said, yeah. And I said, what was it? He said, sleeping. So that was the great interview.
That's right. I think it's undervalued, you know.
It is undervalued. It is. But listen, before we go any further, you're playing the Ulster Hall in Belfast, the Cork Opera House, and you're in the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre.
Yes. And these dates were originally in 2019.
Yeah.
We came over, we played Londonderry, we played Wexford, we played Limerick, and it was the morning after the Limerick show when the big edict came down from the Irish government, and I can't blame them. I think it was a very sensible thing. No gatherings over 200 people. So stymied because that night we were supposed to be going to Cork. I think we had one more day off, and then we were coming up to Belfast and Dublin. Sure. The promoter just said, look, let's just go. And I had to rush back because of course quarantine was threatening as well as everything else. So I had to rush back to Heathrow, sat there overnight while I waited for a flight to get back to Australia. Just got back to Australia before quarantine came in, and my partner Donatella was able to meet me from the airport, drive me the 1.5 hours to where we live in the country. And there I had 14 days, and that's where it started. It's been hell ever since, really, for us performers. Yeah, yeah. But not hell for me, because I made an album, another album. I made a tribute album to the Beatles while I was there. And I also did lots of YouTube videos about, well, not lots, but a couple, about the pandemic. Because, you know, as a writer, you're describing what's going on. And it was, put it like this, it was a very interesting time. And now here with the other side, it's almost like normal life has come on. We've got to be really careful, of course, because the pandemic hasn't gone away. It's just that those in power have decided it's a bit safer, or we are a bit more protected, I guess.
That's what we hope. I want to talk to you about some of the songs. One,
sure.
I still have this every time I play Orchard Road on the radio.
Yes.
It still hits me. There is something about that song. There's a poignancy to it. It's a very sad song. It's a great image song. It's amazing that it still has that impact. And the listener often gets back and says, I'm the same. It's funny, isn't it, that a song like that can still pull at the heartstrings.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, you know, it was all about, the truth of the song is that it was all about an affair that I had with a young fan. It was crazy. And when it got to the hilt of this kind of relationship, and I brought her to my house, and I bought a flat for my wife, my ex-wife now, but we were still married at the time, so I brought this girl into the house that when I was living in, which was a beautiful house with a blue plaque on the wall in Kensington, you know, and she completely couldn't handle it. And I looked at her and I thought, this is not going to work. And I drove my car down to the railway line where my ex-wife Jan was sitting in her flat that evening. And I just got a whole load of 2p pieces, because that's what you used in the phone boxes those days, from a garage, and rattled them all into the phone box. And the song is the phone call. So that's all it is. And the other weird thing about it, I'd say, is that this is 2 years later after this incident, and I'm back with Janice now, and I'm recording with Alan Tarney, a great producer who wrote, wrote Orchard Road with me and quite a few other songs, and we did More Than I Can Say together for the Living in a Fantasy album. I'm still working on with Alan, and we were in the studio, and he'd just taken delivery of a new synthesizer, the Fairlight, which could sound all these old, lovely old, and he had a kind of cinema organ sound, and it was, he was playing a kind of Bach-like melody, and there was a drum machine going, and we were just jamming. But he, you know, we always used to keep recording whatever we did, because you never knew what would come out of it, and that's how we wrote all the songs, you know. So I just strode up to the mic, and the story came out. Never wrote it down. There's nothing written down. That recording that is the single is a one take with the lyrics coming out of the air. And
no way.
It's a live recording in the studio. Alan added a couple of more instruments to it, and I think I might have straightened up a couple of words in an overdub. But other than that, that's all it is. When we'd finished it, we thought, what is that? But it sounds really good. And we played it to Adam Faith, who was my manager at the time.
He was, yes.
Yeah. So we played it to him, and he just picked up the phone, phoned the record company, says, I think I've got the next single. And played it for them. Literally, in those days, used to do funny things like hold the phone up to the speakers.
Yeah.
And they heard it the other end, and they just said, oh, we'll release it next week. And we were just flabbergasted, because we were thinking, we just cut a weird demo, and I've just sung the most personal lyrics that, you know, I've just let go a story that I'd never tell anybody, and here it is on record. Isn't that crazy? It wasn't a hit. I mean, it only went to 19 in the charts.
That's a hit, but it has a resonance for people, and it we know it's personal, but to hear the story from you is quite something.
Couldn't wait. Will I have enough to say?
such a gorgeous song. It really is. Very important.
I mean, what is strange for me is that it's something that was just a stream of consciousness.
Sure.
A completely natural act. And yeah, but Long Tall Glasses as well. And if I can pick up another song, that was written in the same way in the studio. The words just came out. I didn't have it written down. That one's unscripted as well. You know,
from the early days. That's astonishing.
And a weird thing happened in America. They asked, there was a big charity thing where they asked you to give up your original lyrics, and they wanted the original lyrics for Long Tall Glasses, I Can't Dance. And I said, well, I made it up as I went along. So in the end, I had to kind of forge an original lyric.
For God's sake.
Put some crossing out on it and things like that. And it went to the charity. Oh, look, it made them lots of money, but it wasn't really authentic.
I understand. Listen, the Thunder in My Heart story, when that was reissued, can you recap on that one for me? And suddenly you found yourself banging at the top of the charts again. That was an amazing story, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it's also a story about the power of publicity, I think.
Yes,
What happened was, there's a guy called Clive Black who used to be the head of EMI Records, and he's really behind it. He and his mate, Craig Demetch, known as Mech, as a DJ, and he was supporting, Clive had a little kind of setup, with artists that he was supporting. And they went. They claim that they went to a record store in LA and found this record in a kind of junk box and reinvented it. But no, not true. They planned it right from the start. Now, what happened was they also hired a couple of guys called Bimbo Jones, Lee Dagger, and I can't remember offhand.
None of these fellas sound like people you want to invite down for tea.
Well, the funny thing is I've ended up, both of these characters, the other guys, the Bimbo Jones, I've written songs with since.
Oh, that's okay.
They're not just DJs. These guys actually make music, and they choose the DJ kind of way of, live DJ way of releasing their stuff. Lee Dagger, in fact, himself is now in America, and he remixes everyone from Britney Spears onwards, He's really good. So they're really good at their craft. They found these two guys to do this, make this record. They claimed it was all Craig, but it wasn't really Mech. But these guys just managed to somehow filter out all of the old sounds of the record, particularly the drums, speed up the whole thing. I don't know how they did it technically, but it was amazing. And then they played me this demo the week before I left for Australia. So they made up a press story after that Leo Sayre is missing. He's never heard this.
I remember.
I mean, they couldn't do it without my okay, so I had to give permission. And the mechanics of this thing were so complex, So there was this article that appeared in the Independent newspaper saying, Leo is lost in Australia. He doesn't even know what they've done with his song and all. But that's like that. And they released it as a white label. They played it in the clubs. A few of the DJ fraternity who were playing club gigs at that time, club mixes in Ibiza and all this, started to play it, and it started to go off. So there was this mystery of who is this singer and what is this track? And Radio One, there was a girl on Radio One, and she just spotted it straight. She said, oh, come on, that's Leo Sayre. I used to listen to that when I was a kid.
But it turned out to be a huge hit again.
It went straight into the number one position because it got so much radio play. And I've got to say, Clive Black, knowing the industry, was very clever. He decided to hold back the release until they had a guaranteed number one.
Yeah. Now, listen, the dates are Borgosh on Monday, the 29th of August, Ulster Hall, Belfast, Tuesday, 30th of August, the Cork Opera House is... Oh, no, that's the Cork Opera House is Tuesday, 30th. Borgosh is the 28th. Sorry, just getting that right. In Dublin. And then Ulster Hall on the 29th. Hit after hit, and then some new stuff, I hope.
Yeah. I'm going to include some of the Northern Songs, the album that I've made to celebrate my 50th anniversary of me interpreting the Beatles in a very, very different way. I mean, I've Leo-fied it in quite a lot of ways. I haven't had too many brickbats, not too many criticisms. Everybody seems to really like the record. I don't know if Paul or Ringo have heard it yet, but I shudder to think what they might think of it. But I think they'll like it, actually.
Go with your go with your gut instinct every time.
Well, I think you have to. And yes, this was also something that I created with the lockdown period, because I started the project 10 years ago as an experiment to find out if I could make records completely by myself. So here am I in the studio with my computers and samples and sounds and everything, thinking, what if I do the whole thing and I don't phone anybody to help me out? You know, don't phone the musicians.
Yes, yes.
So that's what I started doing. So it was 10 years ago. And then, of course, as soon as, the coronavirus meant we couldn't travel or do any gigs in Australia as well, I started to, let's lock it down. I played it to a few people and they all said, you got to release this. So you've got to finish it. So we ended up with, I think it's 27 tracks or so. It's a double album on vinyl. But also it led me to the last album that I made called Selfie, because that was called Selfie because, I did it all myself. So I found a way to work in the studio, very interestingly, that is a bit interesting. It's a real one-man band affair.
Oh, that's great.
And
that's
I'm loving doing that, you know.
Yeah, and just knowing you can.
There's no intervention from other ideas, you know, because all the way through my career, what I've mostly experienced, and I think that everyone who's creative writes their own stuff will have experienced this as it goes through. There's always someone chipping in saying, no, you can't do that, Leo, or you've got to play it like this. Or there's a bass player saying, that line's impossible to play on a bass guitar. So, you know, it's got to be this. So
it's also remembering the fact that you were a songwriter before you were a performer.
Well, I was a painter. I was a graphic
artist,
you see. So, and a painter doesn't ask anybody in to do the blues and the greens, you know. You should be able to, I think that if you're a creative soul, you should be able to create something yourself.
Sure, surely.
And that
Listen,
was the
I'm so looking forward to seeing you when you come over.
Yeah.
But you're always a joy, whether we're sitting beside a bog or we're doing this while you enjoy Italy, which are new.
Fond memories, mate.
Absolutely. Leo, it's been a joy. Thank you.
I think that interview ended up, RTE went mad, if I remember, because it ended up being about 45 minutes and they had to cut it down to 5 minutes for the show. So
into a full program. It was a full program and allegedly did awfully well. So listen, keep the faith, Leo, and we'll see you in Ireland. Take care, my friend.
Marty. God bless you.
God bless you.